Good afternoon. I will now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:31 p.m. on Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum today to conduct business. Present today is Vice Chair Wilson, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Lukey Tobin, and Senator Rob Myers, as well as myself, Chairman James Kaufman. So I don't see any other legislators. And again, as I keep saying, they don't know what they're missing. So staffing the committee today is my Transportation Committee aide, Emma Torkelson, LIO moderator, Amanda Kraft, and Joanna Crossett from Records. Before we set sail, I ask you to kindly deposit your phones in the nearest bucket of bilge water or simply silence them for now. Thank you. So we have two items on our agenda today. The first piece of it, we'll hear from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on the Alaska Marine Highway System. So we'll go about an hour as far as the time expectations for that. And then secondly, we have two members of the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, sometimes referred to as AMHOB, that will present on their upcoming recommendations to the legislature. So invited testifiers, presenting today from the Department of Transportation is Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, Captain Tony Carvelis, Acting AMHS General Manager, Matt McLaren, a Business Development Manager. Presenting for the Marine Highway Operations Board is Shirley Marquardt, AMHOB Chair, Captain Keith Hilliard, AMHOB Member. We also have Juanetta Ayers, AMHOB Co-Chair, Captain Ed Page, AMHOB Member. So I want to thank everyone for being here. That's a good roster of folks. Reminder before the presentation starts, please remember to restate your name each time you begin speaking so our record secretary taking the minutes can follow along. And to all, please address your comments through the chair. Just a bit of commentary before we start. The Marine Highway System provides critical transportation infrastructure for a vast segment of Alaskans that have limited access to transportation. So its safe, reliable, and sustainable operation is very important. That said, the system is facing tremendous challenges that need to be addressed. And that's what we hope to do today. So we'll start with Deputy Commissioner Keith, and perhaps if you want to bring any other folks up with you. So if you will, state your name and affiliation for the record and begin.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So for the record, Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, and I will certainly bring up Captain Tony Carvalis and Matt McLaren here shortly as the opportunity presents itself in the slides. So first of all, I just want to thank everyone in the audience here today. I think that I shouldn't be the person here speaking about the Marine Highway System. If you look at the collective years of experience sitting behind me, you know, it's pretty humbling. So I just want to acknowledge that. I'll do my best to speak about the system and some of its challenges and what we're doing to seek out solutions. But really, the knowledge is going to come as they get their opportunity to speak. So we are all really aware of the challenges that AMHS has faced. Well, we just came back from the Southeast Conference, where it's really clear there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm into the opportunities that are ahead for the Marine Highway System. But I want to start off by first talking about organizational change within AMHS. As most of you know, after 19 years, Captain John Falvey did retire, and Cisco Flores, our engineering manager, has announced his retirement as well for this spring. So part of our succession planning has begun in full, and we've been working towards flattening of the organizational structure itself so that we can empower some of the main functions within AMHS. That includes our capital program, our preservation and maintenance program, operations, and business. And AMHS has the direct oversight of both myself and Commissioner Anderson. But primarily, we look forward to the months ahead. We have posted an AMHS Marine Director position, which is open, I believe, through the next week. And so if anybody's interested in a job, please go online. And other than that, once they come on board, we'll be working with the team at AMHS to really work on organizational structure that works best for the system so that everyone can be part of that conversation moving forward. So alas, in addition to our staff, AMHS is supported by the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, or AMHOB, and you're going to get the opportunity to hear from some of our members. So I won't go in too much depth other than to comment on the structure. We have one appointed seat from the deputy commissioner, which is myself, on the board, and then there's eight public members. Two are appointed by the Senate president, two by the Speaker of the House, and four by the governor. And so according to House Bill 63, that DOT in consultation with AMHOB will prepare a short-term plan, comprehensive long-term plan, and consider metrics that can help, including output, efficiency, and effectiveness. All of the things that we look for with continuous improvement. This board has been tasked to work with DOT to help seek improvements across the marine highway system.
I have a question. So the board has been created. It's active. Time has passed. I think it was late in 21 when we passed the statute. And I'm just interested in feedback on how that working relationship has developed and how we're doing on progress from some of the key pieces of that legislation, which required short-term, long-term plans and annual plans and then longer-term plans. Has there been any progress in that area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the chair. For the record, Catherine Keith. So to answer the first part of the question, the board kicked off around this time last year, so February of 2022, and the board has met almost biweekly for 2 hours at great length with a number of in-person meetings to get to where we have arrived today. So it's been a significant amount of meetings and materials that the board has gone through. In the first year, I served as the liaison to the board in the change management director position until I transitioned to being on the board itself. And right now the liaison is Andy Mills, our legislative liaison, is helping in this role. So where we are at with deliverables is that we do have a number of things in progress. There are numerous concurrent planning efforts that are going on at DOT, including the short range plan, which is a 1 year operational plan. And then there's also our long-range comprehensive plan, which DOT is working to align with the Southeast Alaska plan and some of our other area plans. So the long-range plan has not yet been started with a consultant on board. We do have a consultant on board that can help with that, but we wanted to ensure that the vision of how the AMHS plan worked with the Southeast plan, the Prince William Sound plan, and the Southwest plan made sense. And so there's been a lot of conversations with the board and DOT staff about what that could look like. So we feel good about our short-range plan. The board has identified goals, which they'll be speaking to, I'm sure. And then we have a lot of work to do. We have identified significant number of metrics, the performance metrics, which are called out in the statute, and those we'll be reporting on throughout the presentation.
Thank you. Please proceed. Mm-hmm.
There are a number of topics that are under the purview of AMHOB. This is basically everything that AMHS is and does, from personnel management, our union contracts, fleet strategy, reliability, our regulatory compliance, and how we do business. Do we focus on revenue? Do we focus on service? A lot of these operating principles, we look to AMHOB to help set that tone. So to help us with this effort, in the fall, we engaged a consulting firm, Elliott Bay Design Group, to launch a comprehensive evaluation to look into our Alaska Marine Highway System to compare our current practices with industry standard best practices. Because we heard loud and clear from the public that they were not satisfied with the service that we were providing, and they wanted to know what we could do better. And our way forward with that was to take a look at our operations, our information technology, our software systems, our fleet maintenance, including engineering and our capital program, and then the business side of things with marketing and finance. And so the team that's presented here, including LG Rayfield, TMG, the Maritime Group, McKinley Research, and KPFS, has really dug deep and communicated with our staff on shoreside engineering and vessel crew to look at what they may recommend for some short and long-term improvements. They completed over 50 interviews, very extensive interviews. They went through over 100 different documents, and they visited every vessel but the Testamina, which due to scheduling didn't work out at the time. And they really covered everything. So our staff was really gracious and took a lot of time to talk this team through their policies, processes, and what they themselves thought could be done better. Out of this, we will have four reports, which will be wrapped up over the next 2 weeks, which we look forward to sharing both with AMHOB, our own staff, and the committee if they're interested. But from what I've seen of the drafts, there's a lot of great quick wins that we can work towards to improve our systems, improve safety, improve efficiency, and work towards kind of overall improvements that we all want to see.
I just want to say I'm interested. So any of that work product as it's released, would definitely like to see it. Thank you. We have a question. Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, you mentioned quick wins. Can you just name one or two?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, through the chair to Senator Tobin. There's at least 100 recommendations on the vessel side, for example. Some quick wins could be labeling of any materials on board the vessels. Quick wins. I'm trying to picture what I've seen. Development of process guides. Because of the succession planning that we're going through, we want to make sure that positions we want to encourage and empower people to step up to other positions that they know what's expected of them. So having things in writing is an example of a quick win. It may take a little time, but it is a quick win. Vessel passes for our staff so that all staff, shoreside and vessel, can travel would really help with morale. Ongoing newsletters so that we can communicate across shoreside and vessel staff about ongoing events and what's happening with the fleet. Yeah, things which we all try to do and try to have time for, but we all want to improve with. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'd like to invite up Captain Tony Carvalhas, the acting AMHS General Manager.
Mm-hmm. Please put yourself on the record.
My name is Captain Tony Carvalhas, and I'm the acting General Manager for the Alaska Marine Highway System. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. You can see, we jumped ahead a slide. There we go. That the Alaska Marine Highway System has been around for 50 years ago, and the state established the system to provide essential service to coastal communities. A brief introduction of myself before we get into the slide, though. I've been sailing in the Merchant Marine for 18 years before I came to the state and started working for the Alaska Marine Highway System. I started out as an assistant port captain, got promoted to port captain, and then operations manager, and now acting general manager until a new manager can be selected. So I think that the Marine Highway System is a very special thing to a lot of people and provides an essential service, and there's a lot of history to the system, and I'm actually proud to be here and represent the system in this role. So we transport, people, vehicles, goods, freight, all kinds of things, military equipment sometimes, animals. I think we carried around some elephants at one point in the history of the Marine Highway System. So anything that is road legal, we'll carry on the ships. I think there was oxen and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, we do a lot. We take road legal loads. We can take those weights across our transfer bridges and on our ships. And I think we're an important service for many people, not only along the coast, but we also bring people to the interior, you know, across the Gulf of Alaska and up to, you know, Whittier and into the Anchorage area. So, we, you know, we provide that essential service. And, you know, and another thing is we provide transportation to a lot of communities in Alaska that are unrepresented, and they need to get together and see their relatives and be able to visit each other. So, next slide. Proceed. So you can see from this slide that ships don't necessarily get better with age. You know, they have a expectancy of about, you know, I think Washington State had their expectancy at about 60 years. We're about the same with the class of ferries we have. You know, and after 30 years, the maintenance costs go up, that you can see from this particular slide. The Matanuska is coming up on 60 years old. So we have a need to start thinking about replacing ferries, you know, and being ready to spend to maintain our current ones. There's a lot of history to the Marine Highway System. On January 23rd, 1963, the Malaspina arrived in Ketchikan, causing a traffic jam. So the residents clamored to see the ferry. And then the year later, we started working up in Southwest at the Tustamina. And she started providing service up the chain and in Prince William Sound. So it's a lot of history there. Today, the Tustamina replacement vessel is a ship that's being designed. And it's on deck for, you know, construction. So we're looking into that. That ship needs to be replaced. Tustamina takes a beating, you know, because it's out in the ocean a lot. So we need to replace that vessel along with some others. And, you know, today we've added crew cabins to the Hubbard to allow her to, you know, be able to provide more service through a longer operational day. And what that does is it allows the crew to get some rest, you know, while they're on board. They're not up all the time. So they can go farther. They can lay down and sleep because there's work rest standards. And then we sold in June of 2022, we sold the Malaspina to the Ward Cove Group. And we are looking at turning her into a training platform, you know, for some of our crew to get, you know, new people in and trained and try to recover our crew numbers. So nice training program, and we're looking into that now.
Thank you. Is it suitably reflective of your fleet, particularly not the past, but as we go towards the future with the new vessels?
Yes. Sorry. So here's a here's a quick fleet status update. Slide's not cooperating, but you can see that in the you can see up there by looking at the slide there that many of our ships are in overhaul periods during the winter, so we take them out for regulatory inspections and to go through shipyard work, steel replacement, safety equipment is serviced, and certifications are pursued, and we have repairs and upgrades. So we also save it, you know, the wintertime when the ridership isn't as high to perform maintenance items that are hard to do during the summer months when the passengers are aboard, and we get our drills done for the Coast Guard. So it's a good opportunity to do that. And yeah, next slide.
Thanks. We have a question, okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Captain, thanks for being here. Deputy Commissioner, appreciate it. Congratulations on the new gig. A question just occurred from something you said while we were on the previous slide. If we're looking at using the Malaspina as a training platform, what is that something that's going to come back to an AMHS dock? Is that going to stay out at Ward Cove? And do we have a sense of what the cost of using the vessel is going to be?
So through the chair, Representative Keel. We are working with the owners of the vessel now to try to come up with two contracts, one to get a program in place and another to get an ongoing service contract for training the people. I don't know what the costs are right now for that. There are things on the ship that don't change from ship to ship, whether you have an old ship or a new ship. So like the firefighting equipment, you know, how you move and get around on a ship. It's pretty, like a ship is a very, sometimes a very difficult place to move around in if you're going to fight a fire in an engine room. So the ship would make a good training platform. And we're hoping that we'd be able to get some people who are working on their documents. It's a long process to get a merchant mariner credential. You've got to apply for a transportation worker identification credential, and then you got to apply for the Coast Guard license. So we ended up losing a lot of candidates because of the long time to be able to get the credential. So we want to get them in, get them working for us, get them trained while they're pursuing that so we can keep them and retain them so they don't go to another state and try to work. And of course, we're trying to hire Alaskans too, sir. Yes.
Quick follow-up? Yeah. Thank you. And I think what the system has been doing in terms of getting ABs, you know, bonuses and putting them up on the vessel and training, you know, has been exemplary. I wish we'd started it years ago. The question about the Malaspina is 8 months ago we owned her.
Through the chair, Representative Keel, it's very expensive to keep a ship, even, you know, these ships are very difficult to maintain. The older they get, the more money they cost. I understand the concern, but to just have a ship sitting around for a training platform would be much more expensive than just going and trying to get a contract with somebody who's using that ship for not only for our training purposes, but for a lot of other things, which they're making, you know, making a profit off of and for their own purposes. And that's what the group is doing there. So we only need it for a very narrow thing where they're using it to their advantage for, you know, other enterprises.
I think, Mr. Chairman, it'd be great to see a comparison of those costs when they come in.
Thanks. Yeah. We look forward to that. Just want to mention for the record, Representative Hemshute joined us at 1:53 p.m. Welcome to the committee. Okay, let's proceed. We've got a lot of material to cover.
So passengers by region, you know, we see a downward trend here, and there's been a drastic decline since 2018. A lot of that is due to the pandemic. You know, we rolled out of we came out of a labor strike and rolled right into a pandemic. And so the slide is, you can see we're on the upward trend again, and I think that speaks to the resiliency of the marine highway system. I mean, obviously, we have to fix things going forward, but I think that it speaks to the people that work for the system and the dedication and the ability for us to recover.
Thank you. This slide is actually the nexus for quite a few questions that I have, so I asked the committee to put up with me maybe while I dig into this. As I see this long-term trend, it's true that there's been a short-term rebound from a precipitous drop, but the overall trend is that downward with respect to Southeast. Now, pretty fairly steady state in the Southwest. There's some variation there, but so specifically to the Southeast ridership, I guess, Captain Carvelis, the main question I have to frame all this is, are we properly reacting organizationally and with route structure, with ship design for the reality today? I know that, you know, the ferry system has a great history, but are we looking back at history and not adequately looking at what we need to do today? And I frame that around this ridership.
Mm-hmm. Senator Kaufman, for the record, Captain Karvelas. I think that we are, the commissioner's office has become very engaged with the go-forward plan with the Marine Highway System. There's a lot of ideas being discussed on how we operate ships, what ships we need, you know, the replacement strategy for ships, and to make sure that those ships fit in to the plan that we need going forward. So we don't have too much, but we don't short ourselves either with what the needs are for the Marine Highway System. So I don't know, I think, you know, I've been here, I've been working for the state for 14 years in the Marine Highway System, and if there's any time that there's changes being made to react to things and to address the issues going forward, that time is happening right now. And I just, you know, I think that it's good with the MHA board, the openness of the commissioner's office to support the Marine Highway System and to offer the resources and the ideas. I was just on a Teams meeting this morning. We're just discussing things, you know, just very openly, very modern discussions. I'm impressed by it. I'm impressed by what's going on. So
thank you. That's good to hear. As I was looking at the slide pack in preparation, I just did some just light research, and I went back to 1978 when the airline industry was deregulated. And so what happened there was a transformation from a point-to-point system to a hub-and-spoke system. Yeah, better or worse, that has its own problems too. Any of us that have been stuck in Atlanta or any other airport around the country. It was designed to provide service to drive down costs. And I guess what I would challenge is we have to think ourselves that far outside of the box with what we're doing and be sure that the communities that need this system are getting the highest value at the lowest cost and the best reliability. So just a point in history. If I may, another question. So with respect to the changes that you're going through and your outreach, we've talked previously about the voice of the customer. So the coastal users of this, you know, those towns that really rely on it, do you have reliable mechanisms for pulling them into the conversations as you discuss design of the system as well as the ships?
Kevin, do you want to, that's a good website.
Yeah. Senator Kaufman, thank you for the question. For the record, Catherine Keith, to answer your question, I'm going to say both yes and humbly no. The answer is yes, that we do have a lot of excellent tools that are available to us. We've been using some modern platforms like publicinput.com that allows our ridership to text message us, call on the phone, and have their comment be transcribed. They can engage with the system on a website or send in emails. And then also through teleconferences, Captain and the team at AMHS just had a teleconference about our summer schedule where people can call in and just have conversation about it. And I would say it's an extraordinary amount of feedback that we get from users of the system. Since I've been around, I've read over 1,000 comments. So I think we are hearing people. Where we're struggling with right now is being able to then interact with that information and then make changes with what we feel are sort of limited tools in our toolbox to make the adjustments that are being asked of us. So
thank you. We have a question from Senator Tobin.
And I apologize. This might be a duh question. My experience often comes from growing up in rural Alaska, where our airplanes are our access in and out of our communities. And of course, the ridership changes with price increases or price change. It changes when they change routes, how frequently people are able to access these sources. And so I see this graph, and I think that there's so much more data behind it that we might need to see why these numbers decreased. I'm assuming there are multiple factors, and I would love to see some of that correlating data around price change, around route changes, and other things that were made to maybe streamline the services but didn't provide quality of access to that transportation route. So that's just a future graph request.
Well, thank you. I will say I suspect that the availability of air travel, you know, air travel has been revolutionized, and I suspect that it's become a much more robust competitor. So back to the prior, the discussions about how to implement and all of that, do we have line of sight on when that starts to become more actionable?
Yeah, Senator Kaufman, it becomes actionable now. I think with the, as Captain Karbalas mentioned, we're in an exciting time of change, and staff across all departments of AMHS are excited and stepping up to meet the needs of the community. And so we're literally doing everything we can to try to accommodate requests that are coming in. So that just does take a lot of out-of-the-box thinking. And, you know, as we look forward to the infrastructure investments that are coming our way through the Federal Transit Administration and others, that just plays into it, how we use that money to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the community. And then also to follow up on that, the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, AMHOB, is meeting tomorrow to go over service levels in person all day tomorrow. Public is invited to attend this at the DOT headquarters building. And this is one of the things that they're trying to help the Marine Highway System with, is what does service, essential service, look like for the communities, and then how can we get there with what we have now, and then what does this look like in the years ahead as we bring on new vessels.
Thank you. Let's proceed if there's no more questions.
For the record, Catherine Keith. So I'll just briefly mention here that as part of our effort to be responsive to the public, we wanted to increase the amount of transparency about the system, because we recognize we may not be meeting our service goals, and we had reasons for not meeting our service goals, but we wanted to make sure we were communicating enough with the public about what those were. And so we created, back in September, the governor's office announced this Charting the Course, it's a change initiative, reimagining the Alaska Marine Highway System. And the three phases are stabilization, recovery, and full steam ahead. And we are in the stabilization phase right now, where we know what our metrics are, we know where we want to go, but we're not necessarily making forward progress on our crewing goals, for example. And when that occurs, we may see a decline in service. Our unreliability may continue because there could be cancellations that we don't have notice for, and that we lack the capacity with other vessels to make up the difference if one vessel goes down. So in the stabilization phase, we did a number of things for the public to help have patience with us. For example, we did eliminate dynamic pricing, which we had received significant number of complaints about. While it did bring in revenue to the service, it was also what some customers felt like a penalty to them. So if we couldn't commit to being reliable, it seemed unfair to ask the public to be willing to pay for these dynamic pricing. So that had gone away, and we've also made some adjustments to our travel policies so that if we do cancel for conditions related to our crewing or a vessel, that we try to make accommodations for those passengers that are displaced until we get out of the stabilization phase. And so how are we measuring this? We measure by crew, fleet, and budget, just real high-level categories. And I'd like to go a little bit in depth into some of these metrics as we're talking about continuous improvement.
Thank you, but just time check, 2:05, and so we've got 25 minutes left and maybe as many slides.
Yeah.
So we just want to leave enough time at the back end of the meeting today. Thank you.
Okay. For the record, Catherine Keith. While we talk about our budget, I would like to introduce Matt McLaren, our business manager, to speak for just a couple minutes, brief minutes, on our budget, the health of our budget, if you wouldn't mind.
Mm-hmm. For the record, Matt McLaren, business development manager for the Marine Highway System. As far as looking at the budget, this slide shows some past year's budgets, the authorized budgets, and then our calendar year 22 budget on there includes the six-month bridge authority as we shifted from fiscal year to calendar year on our budget. The main points on this slide, we'll try to be brief on it, but the main points, the 23 budget provided for 362.7 weeks of service, a little over 6,000 port calls, and then down at the bottom, $143.8 million of spending, which includes just over $60 million of UGF, $868.7 thousand of CIP receipts, and then nearly $83 million of the federal IIJA funds. And then next column over has the calendar 24 governor's proposed budget, a little bit fewer weeks of service, but that's mainly due to the availability of what ships we have available. Some of the bigger ships are going to have to be in a little bit longer term overhaul projects, so that reduces the total weeks there a little bit. And one thing to point out, it does have the $83 million of IIJA funds on here, which as we had these budgets proposed, we didn't have all the details on the funding opportunity yet. So there is a state match portion involved, so that's something we're going to have to work with the committees on and resolve that issue. So 23 budget did have some language, as I'm sure you know, in there of $20 million that we could use of UGF if the IIJA funds didn't come as high as expected. So, but there is still some we'll need to work with the committee on.
$285 million. Infrastructure fund. Mm-hmm.
So we'll hit this slide quick. This is out of our FY22 annual financial report. We had just over $100 million, $106.4 million of operating expenditures and $31.3 million of revenues. And that seems pretty low at that time for the revenues. We're still kind of recovering from the COVID pandemic. Our summer traffic this past summer started picking up, and between July and December of 22, we had just over $25 million of revenue. So our traffic is picking back up. Our revenues are getting back to normal where we should be. So we're expecting much better numbers for fiscal 23.
Question, Senator Kidd?
Just a real quick one. Can you give us a proportional breakout on the ticket sales, passenger versus vehicle?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Keel, we can give you the breakdown. Usually it's as far as the total revenue, our vehicle sales are a very large portion. That's where the primary portion of revenues are. But we can certainly send you the breakdown for 22, what that was.
Okay. Please send that to my office.
For the record, I'm Catherine Keith. So I wanted to touch a little bit on the recent awards from the Federal Transit Authority for the $285.6 million and what this will look like for the Alaska Marine Highway System. We did receive $72 million for vessel modernization, and these are for projects that have been that the design has been completed for this work for the Columbia, the Matanuska, the Taslina, and the Kennecott. We received $68.5 million for the Tustamina replacement vessel, otherwise known as the TRV. This project is underway, and we have a number of CMGC contracts out for bid right now, and the shipyard will soon be out as well. We did receive award for design of a new mainliner for $8.5 million. And as well as $46 million for a low-no-emission electric ferry, which could service the routes between Metlakatla to Saxman or Ketchikan, for example, or Northland Canal, Haines, and Skagway. And?
Thank you. I have a high-level question for Deputy Commissioner Keith. So we're doing major work. Big spend on big long-term items, but the long-term plan is still a work in progress. So what plan are we following while we're doing, this major spend and making changes? And so I'm concerned that we're doing things now that may lock us in from actually having a plan that works if we're already doing things that aren't in the plan.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. For the record, Catherine Keith. there's a couple things that I could comment on. You know, first, yeah, you're right. We are very eager to get a long-range plan in place that speaks to both operations and capital investments of the system. Meanwhile, there were a number of things underway that were clearly clear needs for the system. When the grant team evaluated the opportunity ahead of us, our strategy was to put 50% of the opportunity into new infrastructure and 50% to fix what we already have, because while we are looking onto the horizon for what is ahead, we still have to maintain what we have right now. And so we applied for those grants strategically so that it was a evenly spread. And then with the money that was spent on maintaining our existing infrastructure, about half of that went to docks or ferry terminals, and then half of it went to our existing fleet, the vessel projects. So these projects, for the existing repairs that were needed, these have been on the books for a number of years, and we just needed to get the funding in order to make it possible. And so even without a long-range plan, these projects needed to happen if we wanted to continue to maintain those vessels. Similarly, the Tustamina replacement vessel had been under design for probably 10 or 15 years with the system, and so this was the opportunity to move forward with that project as well, which had already been through 60% of its functional design before this funding opportunity came available to us. Along with that, there have been other plans over time. Mr. McLaren, his office have been working on a modernization plan, and a number of people have worked towards, you know, what's next after the Matanuska retires, for example. So there is another mainliner vessel that's going to be needed, possibly two. That being said, now is our time to go back and understand what that looks like. We have the money to go through an extensive design process, public engagement process, to take that step back and see of this next new vessel, you know, what do we need for our system. Similarly, with the low no emission ferry as a shuttle ferry, we have money for the design and money for construction, but we now take that step back and look at the design and really see where it makes sense. While we look at service levels throughout the system as part of our area plans, the Southeast plan, the Prince William Sound plan, and the Southwest plan, to help us define service areas that include marine transportation, highway, aviation, how all of that plays together so we can make sure that communities are getting, you know, equal opportunities for transportation. So there has...
I appreciate all that. But as someone who survived a lot of big capital projects, I know that just getting funded, that's the beginning of your problems, really. Particularly so if you don't have adequate planning that's integrated so that what you're doing today actually results in success tomorrow. So I think for me, this is just underlining that we have to get these plans that, you know, we passed HB 63. It had that planning requirement that was, you know, back in 2021. So it's been there. So I look forward to plans that we can see where this work is embedded in a plan that makes sense, because the system design drives the component design, not the other way around. You don't want to build boats and then figure out what to do with them. I know a lot of this is locked in by the type of route, et cetera, but still. All right, let's proceed. Sorry for taking up time. Oh, question from Senator Wilson. Yeah.
Actually, I think you were on your next slide and you went back. But my question really is, if we own some of these boatyards or these vessels are going to be built, I'm assuming, and we know the type of services and routes and the type of vessels we need in the boat replacement, it's either sort of Southwest, Southeast, or back and forth to Seattle. Can you explain, and you can get back to the committee, or maybe I'm just a little lost in the time frame of the design and why $8.5 million to design.
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Wilson, $8.5 million for the design of a new mainliner. It is an approximate estimate. The Tustamina replacement vessel, the design for that is approximately $13 million. I can get back to the committee with more specifics. this design has potential to be similar to the Tustamina replacement vessel, if that's how it moves forward, in which case the costs could be slightly less than that for the Tustamina replacement vessel. If that answers your question.
Yeah, if I could do a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Thank you for the chair. I guess I'm just lost on the design costing $8.5 million. If that can be broken down and just give me a budget of how that works, would be, or to the committee, that would be helpful, because, you know, I'm the landlocked guy. And so it'd just be helpful to help out. Thanks.
To the chair, Senator Wilson, happy to provide those details.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And again, to my office, we'll distribute. So let's proceed. Thank you.
So for the record, Catherine Keith. Next, we have our ferry dock infrastructure across five rural Alaska communities, $45.5 million. These includes ferry terminal upgrades into Titlick, Chiniga, Cordova, Pelican, and Ock Bay. These will allow our vessels to be more versatile and to be able to serve more communities with our existing fleet. Right now, we have restrictions with where some of our vessels are able to dock.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to skip through these slides briefly, but please stop me if you have questions. We are also monitoring the health of our fleet, both by the average age of the vessel, by our vessel availability, and other factors such as our ship maintenance request backlog, shipyard forecasting, and just the general maintenance profile of the vessels themselves. And we have a pretty good handle on our asset management system of both our vessels and our shoreside facilities. We inspect them annually or biannually, as is the case of our shoreside facilities. This is an example of just a high-level graphic of what our current state of affairs looks like for our fleet. Currently, we have about $159 million of backlog maintenance needs across the fleet. The federal funding that we received will help address a lot of these needs.
Senator Keel or Wilson.
All right, thank you. I guess this question goes back to Senator Keel's question on sort of the training. Is there any period of time that we are operating all eight ships?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. I'd like to hand that question off to Mr. McLaren for the last time that we've had all eight ships running.
Sure. For the record, Matt McLaren, business manager for Green Highway System. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the schedule we're doing now, we don't always have all ships running. We will, and we do have the budget for it. Our challenge the last couple of years has been finding enough crew to run all ships at the same time. And with the two new ferries, Taslina and Hubbard, we haven't had those on the run yet with the other ships because of the challenges and the shorter runtime without crew quarters. So now that the crew quarters have been added to the Hubbard, that ship will be much more useful to us as that project just got done. And we certainly want to run all ships all the time. And the budget provides, and the governor's goal has been to provide us funding so we can run all ships all the time. Of course, there's always some downtime with overhauls and the required requirements for that every year, but that's certainly our goal, to get back to that point to run them all that we can.
I can do a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, please.
I understand that's the goal, is to run, I'm sorry, nine ships, because I forgot about the Hubbard's on there. But wouldn't it just be a simpler opportunity for training when you're not running a ship, or have that dock downtime to use that ship as for training, and then you can use multiple ships for the actual ships that we're running in real time, just for the opportunity for training, that would just keep some of those costs down? I just throwing that out there, but it just seems like we haven't ran all ships just because of budget and crew, and that may not be the foreseeable future for the next few years, what it appears like by the presentation. So I just concerned about paying for a ship that we sold when we have ships that we can currently use when they're not operating. More of a comment, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just comment to that. I think what we're looking for is what's the equipment utilization factor. And you can't ever use equipment 100% of the time. It always has some necessary downtime. I think what we want to know is what, you know, what's that target, that utilization rate, and what's our path and our progress to getting there. Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share the committee's excitement to see the Hubbard enter Revenue Service. It's been a long time coming. I'm not sure I understand how to read this slide. I take it that the red are the critical investments in these vessels. We'll see those done first while we work on replacing Tustee and a mainliner. I mean, is that how I should understand the red, yellow, green here?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Keel. Yes, I do apologize for this graph. Most people provide that sentiment that what is going on here. However, the red is are the items on board that are immediate, in immediate need for repair, safety, urgency, or regulatory compliance. The medium and low are items that are more deferred maintenance that are going to become critical issues, but right now it could be deferred. So the red are the items that we're very interested in correcting.
Just by way of follow-up, that's helpful. And I'm glad to see that the bar under the Taslina is as short as it is. Because my understanding from slide 17 was a little different, that there was a plan to put tens of millions into the Taslina that precisely meets the chair's description of trying to figure out building a bunch of stuff and then trying to figure out what to do with it. So I'm not sure with the presentation we'll come to that, but I'm happy to see this slide in terms of what's urgent.
I just want to state my objection to saying that 50 plus is old.
Only for steel hulls and salt water, Mr. Chairman.
Let's proceed.
Over the hill.
Any further questions? So let's continue. We just time check. It's 2:23, and we want to be done at 2:30.
For the record, Catherine Keith. A couple slides that I'll point out before we move to the end of the presentation. The first is that the committee was interested in our processes and process improvements. So within the engineering, just because of the magnitude of work that is available, we are looking at ways that we can streamline our processes so that we can be prepared ahead of time with a work plan before a vessel gets into the shipyard with a very complete and fully engineered work plan. And so our engineering team is aggressively working on this, especially with the incoming federal funding and capital programs, is going to put extra work on the plate of our team. In order to help with this, we have engaged a firm, ECS, which will be helping our engineering team through providing some supplemental services, and we look forward to having them on board to help with our backlog of work. I will like to spend 1 minute on our crew, because our crew is our number one risk factor right now. As has been discussed, we have some innovative training options that we're looking forward to deploying in upcoming next couple months. And over the past 6 months, we've done a lot of work to look at the data underneath some of our software systems to understand exactly what positions we are short and why, so that we can get to be more proactive with forecasting our crew shortages. So the summer schedule, for example, we're running limited service because we don't have the crewing availability. We want to be able to run scenarios on what it would take if we want to run all ships all the time and where our staffing shortages are, so we can be strategic in our recruitment and retention and training opportunities for those positions. And we're happy to provide more detail on that when we have additional time. But we do have a very large team across the state really working on this problem. We consider these positions to be mission critical at DOT.
Thank you. Let's proceed. Mm-hmm. Oh, question?
On this or the next?
Okay, well, Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Either on this slide or the next one, I have a request, and I'm asking because I don't have an answer. I'm pleased to see that we're doing pretty well on licensed deck hands now, the masters and mates. But I know the Board of Marine Pilots just licensed a couple more of your folks to go sail cruise ships all summer. They're not coming back, I don't think. How do we fill a pipeline with enough folks with Coast Guard pilotage sail them and sail our blue canoes? I don't have that answer. I'm begging. Help.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the next slide, one of my requests with my previous request of overlaying the route changes and price changes, could you also include just kind of a general data point for all crew workplace injuries as well? I'm curious to see that correlated to the increase of deferred maintenance and other maintenance costs to see if there's a correlating factor between workplace injury.
The Chair, Senator Tobin, absolutely happy to do that. And we can talk to their safety measures at another time, but we are looking forward to having a pretty robust safety program, both occupational safety and passenger safety as well. And one comment through the Chair, Senator Keel. We are looking for interns as a strong way to be able to bring back up our staff with pilotage and to grow our own captains once again. And one thing we need to do for that to happen is to become a member of an Embark program, which is like a respectful workplace certification that you get through MARAD. And this is something that we're applying for right now and look forward to bringing back into our ferry system so that we can be accepting interns and cadets, and look forward to promoting those ideas and other strategies. We're all ears as well, as the public has them. We're eager to hear all ideas on how we can retain our experienced captains.
Thank you. Time check, we got about 3 minutes for this segment. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, just a quick comment, Mr. Chair. I guess, or question to the Deputy Commissioner. We have a training program, right, in Seward and AFTEC that does have that. So just for folks, are we trying to help maybe help finance some of that education in return for employment, for loan repayment, for programs like that to help? Because we do have a marine piloting program. I just wanted to throw that in there, that there is a pipeline that we should mention and utilize. I hope that we're utilizing that program.
Thank you. Let's proceed.
Thank you. For the record, Catherine Keith. The last slide is just to mention that Alaska still is the last frontier. So if we want to attract employees and we want to bring back ridership to the ferry system, our staff also wants to make it a fun place for people to be. A lot of times we're very serious about our ferry system because it does provide essential service. It is also fun. And I think a certain group of the certain workforce still really likes to have fun. So we're doing what we can to focus on very real specific training needs, but also remember that this is once upon a time a very fun way for people to travel across the state. So I'd just like to thank the committee for listening to our presentation. I think I could speak on behalf of most of our staff, where we're ready to roll up our sleeves and do the hard work that it takes to move forward and take advantage of opportunities in a strategic manner. So thank you.
Thank you. I, on behalf of the committee, want to thank you for being here, for all the content that you've delivered, the work that went into it. For the record, this committee is asking for more information than some cases in the past, I believe. And so we're trying to dig deeply with the stated mission that we're here to improve these systems, transportation across the board and the marine highway system. I'll gavel out in a minute to allow the transition between DOT, the Marine Highway System, and then the MHOB board. But before I do, I just want to state that when we created the board, in previous legislature, the goal was to really drive improvement, to create a board that was not, we didn't want to just create another board. We wanted to create one that could help drive improvement in this essential service. So that's, I appreciate hearing, you know, this cooperative approach, and that you actually are pursuing improvement in the areas that need to be worked on. So again, I want to thank you. And if there's no other comments on this segment, we'll transition. And I'll brief at ease as we transfer over to the AMHOB board. gavel back in. And so thank you. As noted before, our brief at ease, we're now transitioning to the AMHOB, the Alaska Marine Highway Oversight Board. We have members here that will testify, give us some information about what they're doing, and we'll start with, if you would, please put yourself on the record, and we'll proceed.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. For the record, my name is Shirley Marquardt. I am the current chair of the Alaska Marine Highway Operating Board and the executive director of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, members of the committee. My name is Juanetta Ayers. I'm the vice chair for the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. My day job is executive director for Commonwealth North, which is a public policy think tank.
All right. Well, we don't have a fancy presentation, but if you would, just feel free to tell the story of forming the board, whatever arc you want to take in the next, the available time we have. About 27 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator. Again, for the record, Shirley Marquardt. First, I want to thank you for the invitation to the AMHAB board members to come to the Senate Transportation and brief you on what we've been doing, work in this past year, almost to the day. It's been a full year since we first met. And I'd also like to thank our AMHAB members who are here and not here. We have two more members who are here, Captain Ed Page and Captain Keith Hillard are also here, and I think would have some remarks they would like to present to you as well during this time. But the amount of time and engagement to volunteer for this job while all of us holding down full-time day jobs, you kind of know how that works, has been tremendous. And we've been meeting every 2 weeks for at least the last 9 months, and we've kind of started to pull it out to 3 weeks to just give everyone just a little bit of a break and more time to gather information. So what I would say is that along with this aggressive meeting schedule, there have been very impressive tranches of presentations and information and charts and graphs that we've, as the board, we're just normal people from around coastal Alaska. We don't live and breathe the operations of a very complex system. So it's quite a lot of information, and I will tell you that our first year has been primarily spent in an educational role and gathering information and understanding how this system has worked for past decades, how it's not worked in past decades, so that we have a much better chance of coming up with that successful elements for a long-range plan. So, as was said before by Deputy Commissioner Keith, we are meeting tomorrow and we'll be reviewing, editing, and improving our first annual report to the legislature, the governor, and the public. So when that report is approved, we will make it available and we will certainly send it to Senator Kaufman so you can send it out to the other members of the committee, but it will be available to all legislators. So real briefly, the elements in that rough draft that we've been just kind of looking at and putting together recently are, we thought we'd start with a very brief introduction and kind of summary of HB 63. A lot of legislators are very familiar with it, and you as well, Chair. And we do have some new senators and House members who are not. So it's a good idea to make sure everybody understands what the intent of the legislature was with the changing this from the MTAB to a different kind of board, still advisory, but different. So we will also supply makeup of the AMHOB board as required by statute and with an understanding of where we feel that maybe we are stronger in some areas and weaker in others. So in successive years, as new members are identified and approved to sit on this board, those gaps are filled. We will do a summary of the practical and we think very important long-range plan elements that we identified board as a board in a in-person meeting, an all-day meeting in November at DOT in Anchorage. We had spent many months, 10 months at least, looking at information and gathering information and an understanding of the system. And I had encouraged board members as well to look at what BC Ferries does on a regular basis with their annual business plan, their long-range plan, their short-range plan, their vessel replacement plan, and it's followed. And I think that's key, that we want to really ensure, or hopefully ensure, that the legislature really has some teeth to ensure that the next administrations and folks that come along realize that this is just not a study, another study to go on the shelf. We've got lots of those, but it's a plan to be followed. So we will do a summary of those, a short summary of some concerns we have with the ADOT and PF planning process, because it's an intermodal plan, and they're a very large agency, and things tend to move slowly. We're the AMHOB. We're looking at what needs to happen with the system, understanding that it's in a very, very dark place right now. And we'd much rather be the rabbit, but we're kind of forced into the turtle mode. And we have some real concerns with that. And we are hoping that with these new funding opportunities, that the planners and DOT and whomever needs to be a part of that planning process are able to really streamline that and move quicker than we have in the past. And the reason I say quicker than we have in the past is because I think I saw the first design of the Testamina in 2006, and it's still not out. So this is all because of a lot of consequences of not having a long-range plan. For the past decades, a lot of you are familiar, there's no vessel replacement framework in place for critical mainline ferry design and discussion, and there's been suggested it'll take 5 to 7 years to get those vessels from approval and design to actually being in service, which is frustrating. BC Ferries, it's kind of hard, I shouldn't probably pick on them or use them, because they are able to go out of Canada to get their ships built in Poland, but they build their ships in 2 years. So we really need to find a way to accelerate that work. Shifting management decisions based on annual operating and maintenance budgets that provide 1 year of certainty for scheduling routes, maintenance, and personnel. That's been a long time that's been recognized as a real detriment to the operation of the system. Shifting administration priorities in the past that change the direction of the system, often without what seems to be an appreciation for the possible unintended negative consequences or impacts to crew, riders, communities, and effective utilization. Again, these are all the results of not having that long-range plan to follow in place. These are not finger-pointing at past administrations. Ongoing crisis management with vessels, maintenance, engineering team, crew availability, and funding for responsive and reliable service level really don't exist without that plan. So it is also, and you've heard, it's very difficult to get the vessels crewed. Morale for this system, the employees of this system, is just, it's in the basement. It's in a very dark place also. And because they don't see a way forward, they don't see that light at the end of the tunnel, they don't see a plan being followed that leads them to say, I want to work in this system. I love Alaska. I love the AMHS. And now I know I can stick it out, because it's going to get better. And so that's a really important element. And as you know, probably maritime industries across the country are looking for certified, licensed folks for almost every position you can think of in the maritime industry, and they are paying big money for it. So we might need to take a look at that as well. It always comes back to money, doesn't it? Recognizing that the AMHS has evolved into a complex legislative, economic, and regulatory framework, it needs experienced, focused, strong leadership in order to utilize, we think, the future long-range plan and annual planning and operational. And that's critical. Whoever the new director or manager of the system is, they have to follow that plan, and hopefully with the least amount of interference. Matching funds from the state of Alaska to realize significant federal IIJA grants recently awarded for vessel construction, improvements, upgrades, and maintenance are critical to the sustainability of our ferry system and improving the partnerships between the AMHS employees and management, as well as an improved maintenance program for vessels, docks, and terminals are absolutely necessary. So as we've heard before, there's a lot of work to be done. The good news is it can be done. And timing, we think, is critical. And we are really hoping that an aggressive pursuit of new mainliners and crew quarters for the second ACF, as well as dock rehabilitation and some communities that will be needed for those vessels to be able to serve those communities, employee recruitment and retention and support are part basically of the physical foundation of a successful long-range plan. So having said that, part of me wants to say that, the Alaska Marine Highway System is in the ICU, and the stabilization for that system is needed now. It's past need, and it's very, very important. So looking forward, again, the board would like to strongly encourage matching funds for IIJ grants that fit in a long-range plan for the system this legislative session wherever possible, and that we're able to somehow streamline the whole process of design and construction for the new vessels. The safety, the efficiency, the makeup of the routes and vessels scheduling depend on these actions. Without them, we're stuck. We're dead in the water. So with that, I would turn it over to Co-Chair Juanetta.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Juanetta Ayers, Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. I want to just add that both Chairperson Marquardt and I both have had a long history of serving on other bodies related to the Alaska Marine Highway over the years. We both served on the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. Prior to this, I served on the Marine Highway Reshaping Working Group. And part of my commitment to saying yes to these volunteer opportunities is that I have a hard time as a lifelong Alaskan, born and raised here, imagining Alaska without the Alaska Marine Highway. To me, it's a critical symbol of our state, and I can very clearly remember the first trip I ever took on the Alaska Marine Highway, the sense of pride that I had in my state for the fact that we had a Marine Highway and that they were impressive vessels that took us to places that I'd never been to in Alaska. So I just want to say that the Alaska Marine Highway is a critical intermodal transportation link. It's a critical connector to the federal highway system and to the state and international airport networks. And as I said, it's a really important symbol of Alaska. I take a lot of pride. The system is in an unprecedented time of both challenge and opportunity. And I think it's the role of the Marine Highway Operations Board to help identify how to come address the challenges and take the most advantage of the opportunities that we have before us. As you've seen from Deputy Commissioner Keith today, and as Chair Marquardt has described, we have those opportunities ahead of us, but we also have to address stabilization of the system. It's at a critical point. And all of those things being said, I think that the future, because of the opportunities that we have, that we can position the Alaska Marine Highway to be a customer-centric organization that is resilient and adaptive to the opportunities in front of it for the next 40 to 50 years because of the funding that's available to us through the IIJA. The questions that you're asking, the timeline of passenger utilization of the system, if you overlaid that with certain key decisions about vessel types that were introduced, other competitive alternatives, and certain political actions and decisions, you will see why that line declined. We have made too many one-off decisions about vessel types, and they have proven to be unsuccessful. And because we've had to then back off from those and not have that long-term plan. This long-term plan, Chairman Kaufman, as you identified, you have to have that to define what the components of the system are in order to have long-range success. So we hope to have some general guidance for that. My feeling all along has been that we really need to define the metrics of what success looks like. And what I would say is with the opportunity to look at who the new manager of the system is going to be. What we have is an opportunity to really give them the set of metrics by which the system will be judged and for which they will be responsible for delivering.
and then measure consistently against that set of metrics. That will lead to the success of the Green Highway System. The investment in a new fleet, I think, is critical. The optimization of using IIJ monies that are available to us for new vessels is critical. And one component of that is standardization, not one-off vessels, but standardization of purpose-built vessels. Case in point is the Alaska class vessels, which have really been underutilized because we are stuck. We are high-centered on a decision about crew quarters and creating two interoperable vessels that can switch out for each other. And even if there may be a service gap, that the communities that are being served, that Alaskans are intended to be served, have some opportunity for service even when we have vessels offline. So I think those are the critical things, getting the vessels that we have being fully utilized. I'm a proponent for not investing in aging and trying to breathe life into aging vessels, but really focused on that new fleet, the fleet that we need for the future. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. When question for either or both, when we were creating HB 63 to create what we were trying to create a better board that actually had the tools, the expertise, we put in what I refer to as enterprise level management experience to have people that could look at the system as all the way from a hospitality to a transportation system and all the other things that it does and be able to drive improvement. We also put things in HB 63 to allow, to kind of have teeth, not only to have a valid opinion, but be able to use that opinion to drive improvement. So did we get it right, or is there anything else that we need to do? Do we need to work on improvements to what we created, or are there things in implementing that are challenging that you're finding that we need to do something additional or different? Thank you.
I'll start. Thank you, Chairman Coffin. Again, for the record, Juanetta Ayers, Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. We have gone through in the last year what would be the typical forming, storming, and norming process. We're not to norming yet. And so in that process, I think what we've come to understand is that, again, because we're in a period of unprecedented challenge and opportunity, things are moving rather quickly. And for a board volunteers to be on top of all of that and to be reliant on a staff that is being taxed to a great degree to meet those challenges. What I would say is that I think from the legislative standpoint that your intentions we well understood your intentions. In terms of resources and responsiveness, I think the time period has been a challenge. We're reliant on a staff that is really trying to implement a tremendous level of change and getting timely information in advance of meetings. We don't have really independent resources for the board. And so, again, we're just reliant on a staff that is already overtaxed. So from that standpoint, we haven't been able to move as quickly as I think is required by the circumstances or what the desire of the board or the legislature is. And so as we move forward, I think maybe we might be able to. I was going to say the circumstances are a little bit of a runaway chain. What do you call it when you're spinning on the chain? We're spinning on the anchor a little bit, I guess, is what I would say.
And like nautical reference.
Yes. It's not a runaway train. We're spinning on the chain. So that's my take on the circumstances, having been on a number of boards and councils by legislative authorization. I think we haven't yet fully hit the mark. I'm hoping with the report that we'll be working on tomorrow and the meetings tomorrow that we'll be able to come out with some progress to report back to you.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We'll take some questions. Also wanted to mention that we have a Q Keith Hilliard and Captain Ed Page that are here. We want to leave a little bit of time. We've got 8 minutes left. So, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I can appreciate that standing up a new board can be a real pain in the boat. my turn. I want to go back a little bit to something that Deputy Commissioner Keith said that concerns me a little bit. Is you talked a lot about getting that long-range plan out there, and I agree that is key. It's critical to moving forward. But she said, well, actually, the first decision was to put the one-year plan together, not the long-term plan. And that sounds very backwards to me. How can you figure out what you're doing today if you don't know where you're trying to be in a year? Why are we putting together the short-term plan before we put together the long-term plan?
Through the chair and for the record, Shirley Marquardt. That's a good question, and it's one that we've struggled with on AMHOB. We have board members who have served on decision-making, not just advisory boards before, and the thought process was to go look at that long-range planning first, and then, like you said, find out what the contents of that would be. Part of the difficulty was that we had a large number of board members who were just very unfamiliar with the system. So trying to put together a long-range plan, elements of that plan, was something very, very new to them. So we worked through quite a few months of information, and at the meeting in November, asked for an in-person meeting in Anchorage to just talk about elements of long-range planning. And we successfully did that. And those will be included in the report tomorrow, or as when it's authorized and sent to you. In the short term, though, there are things that do have to happen right now. And I think the challenge has been the board is not understanding what those items are until they're kind of done and in the pipeline, and trying to understand where some of them may or may not fit in the board's view of the long-term plan, long-range plan. So we kind of feel that there's some separation there between information that we're getting that we think is something to talk about, make recommendations on. It really doesn't seem to be. It's, well, you know, no, here's what's going to happen. So, and I think that comes back to you also when you have a board of volunteers of people who are just trying to work and understand something and put it together, and you have a large agency that has processes that they've operated for, you know, by decades, and that they are very specific and have very specific timelines, you know, it can get frustrating. I would say that it would, you know, there's information that the board should have, like where is ADOT and PF with the RFP for the long-range planner. I looked it up the last time that we had a discussion about that was with Judy Chapman at DOT, and that was August 31st. And had presented them with some feedback that we had on the scope of work for the RFP. And so we don't know where that is. We don't know if it's out there. We don't know if somebody's picked it up. We just don't know. The position for the manager, when we learned of Captain Falvey's retirement in, January 3rd, at our meeting that I believe was January 6th, the commissioner told us that we asked, you know, well, what are you looking for? You know, what kind of succession planning have you been doing here? If, you know, if you've known that there's a retirement coming, you know, what is the position going to look like? What are the skills, the experience, et cetera? And we're told, well, we're going to work on that. Which, so finding out today that it's been out there and it has 1 week to go was a surprise to myself and the rest of the board members. You know, that's just really simple courtesy information for us to have. If we're supposed to be working in partnership with ADOT and AMHS for these recommendations. We can't make recommendations if we're, you know, unclear of what's happening. So we know that that can be improved, and we think that that's going to be improved here in the near future.
Thank you. Just quickly, time management. If it's the will of the committee and those others in the room, maybe we could extend just a little bit, just by a little bit more time. So, what's that?
saying we should go for another hour and a half.
Okay. So. Okay, well, so we'll just stretch a little bit just because these are important matters. Senator Keel, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, Senator Myers asked my first question, and Chair Marquardt started in pretty seriously on my second. My office has listened in to almost every MHOB meeting, and I will not ask you to describe the relationship. I will describe the relationship between the board and the department when it comes to getting the information the board needs below strain. Can you tell us, you started in on it here, but especially with regards to operations, costs, I heard a description that we have a handle on our maintenance needs and our inventories. That's news to me from my conversations with people in the fleet. Can you tell us what the board needs in terms of information flow from here, going forward?
Through the chair, again, for the record, Winnetta Ayers, AMHOB. Senator Keel, I think we're making progress in terms of getting information in advance. I know that you guys consume a great deal of information on a daily basis in advance of committee meetings. You have staffs, other people that help you with that process. We do not. And so it does really require as volunteers that we get that information in advance in order to be able to commit the time to onboard the information and be helpful and ask for further information. I think that the critical thing, and I want to just touch on Senator Myers' question also just to a great degree. I think that we have been, the board and the department have been moving on parallel paths. The department, because of certain daily pressures and the need to make decisions and the need to submit grants and so forth, is moving a lot faster than the board can move. So I really think what the board's direction is, and I think where we're headed, is we need to get we need to operate at a higher level and think more strategically as opposed to the day-to-day activities of the department. The department has to do what the department does. You're absolutely correct that there has been some frustration and friction between the board and the department on the availability of information, the timeliness of it, and the ability for us to reflect on it and provide advice as we are mandated to do. What I would think going forward as we focus long-term on how the system should be measured as an effective system and how it should be managed as an effective system and who that manager will be, those are, I think, the things that should be the focus of the board as opposed to some of the day-to-day things. That being said, for example, I mean, I'll just give you one that's very top of mind for me right now. I think it just in the last week, an RFP was let on Cascade Point. And we've had lots of discussion on that as a board. The question of whether or not that decision was to go forward on Cascade Point, but to see it out in a public notice is frustrating as a board member because that is a key strategic decision that is going to impact the system. And as I said in my earlier comments, one-off decisions are what has dragged the system down. And I think more one-off systems, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not in 5 years, but if we look down the line 20 years, we will see more one-off decisions today will do the same thing to the system, even if we're able to.
Mr. Chairman, I was good till the end.
Follow up.
The Latuya is a success. The Tusky doesn't run the other runs. Sometimes if you're desperate to get a jack of all trades, you draw the four clubs.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. I'm going to ask a plain question because I just want to make sure that I'm being clear. And I'm reading through HB 63, and I don't see where it might include your recommendations on how to fix some of these issues that I'm hearing. Will you be including those in your report?
Thank you. For the record, Shirley Marquardt, through the chair. Senator Tobin, yes, so they will be included in the report. We want to make sure that this report is a very honest, open reflection of the work that the board has done, the work that we still think needs to be done, where some of our challenges lie in doing that work, because we all agree, we all feel great responsibility serving on this board. As written, HB 63 really gives us that responsibility. And I think that's something maybe different that ADOT and AMHS haven't worked with before. It's always MTAB was very much more of a conversational advisory board. I'm not knocking it. I served on it for many, many years, but it was different. So, yes, you will be seeing that in the report. And I do want to also say something that Senator Keel, if I may, had a question. Getting information, we would like to see more information directly from the people in AMHS in Ketchikan who are operating the system, who have had modernization plans and improvement plans for years, but they don't have the authority to speak to them, they don't have the ability to share them, and I think that's been a real detriment because they live and breathe the marine environment and the you know, ships and the crews and the engineering. The provisioning, onboarding, you know, new crew members. So I think it's really, really important that they are unshackled in a way that I think they have been in the future. So we're hoping to see that improvement.
Thank you. At this point, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping. So the question earlier about the sequence of the plans, the long term or the short term, and really what the intent is that the short-term plan addresses the long-term vision and goals. So you don't have to create the Bible in order to get started. You identify your objectives, your key objectives, your targets, that which you're going to start aiming at, and then you can start aiming at that in a short-term plan, and then the long-term plan will be infilled as you go, and it will help steer the short-term. So it was designed to be a very doable system, from project management typical practices. The other thing is that we did, one of the teeth that we did put into this is the ability to do a corrective action report. Now, the only kind of in legalese, it says that the corrective action will be issued in the event that there's deviation from the short-term or long-term plan, and so we're kind of in a catch-22. We need that thing so that we can start knowing whether or not we're deviating from it. So, but that's coming. Now, the other item that we put in was to have the core competencies and to create a self-improving and self-healing board, in that if there are competency gaps, that they're identified and reported in the report. So that's another opportunity we have. So if there's gaps, they can be included and then we can look at what we can do legislatively or at whatever level that has to be done. So thank you. So let's proceed. Any other questions, comments? We're a bit into overtime, and we want to give the other testifiers time. So I'm going to just gavel out for a second while we transition. Back in, I call us back to order, and we have Mr. Hilliard and Captain Ed Page. If you would please identify yourself for the record, and let us know what we need to hear.
For the record, my name is Keith Hilliard, AMHS, Captain of the Matanuska, ABPOD board member, and Juneau resident for the last 2 years. I would like to leave this dead horse theory for you guys to get copies of later and read that. And I think it's kind of applicable for where the ferry is at right now. I want to take you back to 1960 when the system was being developed, and that's where we are again 63 years later. With Senator Murkowski's and Sullivan's six bills that we got appropriated here, as the Transportation Board, you guys have a position coming up here to really set forth what the Marine Highway can become in the future. They've been talking about the new TUSTE since I was hired in 2006. We desperately need a couple new mainliners. We need vessels that can, to not reinvent the wheel, that can go to every port. And I want to read a few things out of these grants to you. So,
excuse me, with all due respect, you're not going to read the entire document.
No, I'm not going to read. I'm just going to read some parts. So one, they say the longevity that they asked for these grants for our boats is 30 years. So the Matt is now 60 plus a 30. The Columbia is 48 a 30. The Taslin and Hubbard are 3 to 4 years out of their 30, which they have yet to run very much. And the Kennecott's 24 of 30. So the need for new vessels is very strong. What I want to read to you out of this is that was copied in many of these was the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference states that the region's growing concern is the stability of reliable ferry service. The Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District highlights disruption to marine travel as being the key challenge for the region. The Southeast Conference stresses that a strong ferry system is essential to regional economic development, quality of life, and community well-being. And one of the other things is the lack of medical in the outlying communities and the need for the ferry service to come in for medical.
I think we all agree on the need. So I don't think there's a debate about the need for a good, reliable service. I think that's the intent of all of the testimony and I believe it's the committee's intent is to drive a reliable, right-sized system.
Thank you. And I just wanted to the other thing I wanted to mention is our lack of crew and the problems we're having with crewing is very much a function of moving forward. When you talk about the short-term and long-term plan, I think that is one of the key factors of discussing the short-term plan first. I know we need to have the points of the long-term, but why the short-term plan is so important is because we don't have the ability to have the employees to run the vessels we have at the moment. Thank you.
Well, that was good. Thank you. And so now, Captain Page.
For the record, Ed Page, retired Coast Guard captain. That's why I still carry that title and served some 33 years at Coast Guard. Coast Guard first brought me here in 1973, so my experience with the ferry system was started in 73, and it actually brought me to the state, brought me in and out of state several times. I had assignments outside the state, but I kept on coming back, eventually stayed and started the Marine Exchange for Alaska 21 years ago. But I'm very fond of the Marine Highway system. I am a little bit concerned as far as the track was going the last several years. I've been involved several times helping the ferry system in different ways. And I probably would be hesitant to even serve on this board with the exception of the fact that some new funding lines being provided. I think underway as before is not really our answer. We have to recraft, re-energize, reset button. The ships were built 60 years ago. Those are different issues, different challenges, different types of vessels. I'm somewhat of a ferry groupie because several hundred ferries around the world. In fact, it's just I had to get a ferry from Tahiti to get back here in time for this meeting. So it's a big sacrifice. So I was sailing for a couple of weeks to the Tahitian Islands. I came for this meeting because I'm concerned about the ferries. Plus I wanted to brag about my suntan too. But in any case, But I do like to benchmark. I think we do benchmark. And I've been to Norway several times and other countries and looked at ferry systems and see the new techniques and lower maintenance costs, more efficiency, addressing some of these issues with carbon emissions, which is a big issue these days, and looking at different power systems. So I think we're at a total reset button, and we have a funding mechanism to do so, and if we can redirect and recraft the ferry system best meet our needs. So that's, I'm hoping that everyone here on the board is, of course, serving on volunteer time, but I think they're all generally very genuinely passionate and interested in welfare, as you are, of course. And I think there's some new solutions in the future that would do fare well. So it's fiscally and prudent use of the funds are becoming available, and also re-engineering things so we can, it's not a liability. Keep it running, as you said there, Senator, that they, you know, we've got to operate in the future, too. So we have to keep a ferry system that's not hard to maintain, but it's efficient to maintain. I think we're at I think it's a very bright future. I'm excited for it. So that's why I'm willing to serve on it. We've taken enough time. So
I want to thank you. Just quickly, any other questions from the committee? And I want to thank everyone for going into a little bit of overtime. I think we have.
Can I make one more point?
Yes, sir.
For the record, Keith Hillard. In the grant and the budget, they did ask for $25 million for the TASLINA for upgrades of crew quarters and galley and all that. That's what they're asking for. So.
Okay, so we have passionate people on this. There's talent. Really, I believe all we need to do, I'm going to do one more nautical thing, is get on the right course. Everybody on the boat going in the same direction. And I know from having worked in improvement groups that you can be on an improvement team with somebody. They're pulling a little over there, maybe a little over there. But in the end, if everybody works productively with each other, we'll get to a better place. We'll be on a good course. So with that, I'm going to thank everyone for this. This has been great. I've enjoyed it. I hope others have too. And with that, we're going to adjourn, noting that it is 3:14, so we did go overtime, but thank you again, one and all.